Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, this is Lee Cantor with Stone Payton for another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. How you doing, Stone?
I am doing well, man. Been looking forward to this episode. We got a studio full this morning.
Yeah, good crowd.
So in a little bit, we're going to get a chance to visit with Tammy Allen with Do Good. You know, I should have put Get Rewards. That's going to be fun. You look awfully familiar. I think maybe she's been in the studio before, right?
Many a time.
She's shaking her head no, but we'll find out. We're also going to get a chance to visit with Dove Wilker. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman with SpeechWorks. Welcome to the show, Joey Asher.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. We're delighted to have you. SpeechWorks, what do you guys do for folks?
We are a communication and selling skills coaching company. We teach people how to give speeches.
Oh, my. I'm nervous already. What should we be doing differently?
So far, so good. Keep it short. That's the main thing.
We could do that.
So now, do you find that more and more executives, I would imagine, are lacking this skill? And obviously, you found a niche for this.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is the vast majority of business presentations are pretty bad. And we help people make them better.
Now, is there a difference between teaching someone how to do a presentation in front of, you know, an audience, a live audience, as opposed to which we see a lot of now, like video conferencing or webinars or things like that?
There is actually some difference. I mean, when you're live in front of an audience, you're actually working on connecting with people that are live in front of you.
Right.
Whereas when you're working through technology, like on a conference call or a webinar or a Skype,
right.
You sort of have to really work on how do you really connect through that technology. And that takes a special type of skill.
A special skill. And you can provide that, I bet.
Yeah, we can provide that. The main thing is you got to speak with energy. And again, I do think that it's important nowadays, especially to keep things relatively short.
He keeps looking at me when he says,
I keep looking at you over there.
And looking at the clock.
Right. When he gives his counsel, be short, be brief, be bright, be gone. So how'd you get in this line of work, man?
Well, my background is I'm an attorney. I practice law here in Atlanta with a big law firm. Before that, I was a newspaper reporter. SpeechWorks has actually been around for, this is our 27th year in business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the business was actually started by my mother, Spring Asher, and her partner, Wiki Chambers. And about 15 years ago, I got to the point where, well, honestly, I couldn't practice law one more day. And I decided to go into the family business.
And then, so how do you go to market?
How do we go to market? Well, you mean how do we market ourselves?
Right, because, like, do people think that they're bad at presenting?
Yeah, actually, a lot of people do. Or actually, typically what happens is we get a senior executive who looks at somebody who works for them and says, you know what?
That guy needs some work.
That person needs some help. And so they give us a call.
Okay, so that's how it is, typically a referral from some senior person.
Yeah, typically. Though we do a lot of outreach. We have newsletters, and we do webinars, and we appear on radio programs like this.
Now, can you walk us through what the process looks like when you're working with someone that, like
if I hired you to fix Lee?
Yeah.
What would that look like?
How does that begin?
Well, that would be a special program. Yeah,
a big, huge deposit, right?
Yeah. We have to charge extra. No. I mean, we think that to be good at this, you need to do three things well. I mean, we really focus on three main things. Number one, we focus on how do you put together a message? We teach you a methodology for organizing your thoughts, a simple approach. Number two, we do spend a lot of time focusing on style, how you look, how you sound. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of videotaping. So we show you, we give you feedback, we put you up on camera. And then we also spend a lot of time working on Q&A. Because we think, especially nowadays, especially with, you know, the circumstances that you've described where it's a much more interactive world, we think the Q&A is a real important part of doing this well.
Do you find that some people are good at kind of memorizing or being prepared for a speech where they're giving, you know, kind of the same speech they do over and over again, and then they have a difficult time in that Q&A part where it requires a little bit more improvisation?
Yeah, I think that that's one of the real weaknesses of a lot of people is that they think that to be good, what they have to do is they have to memorize exactly what they're going to say.
Right.
But that doesn't really help you connect well with the audience. What you really want is you want sort of a back and forth, mm-hmm. sort of a back and forth type approach.
So what are some myths that often come as baggage with some of your clients, things they've read, things they think that are true about speaking, and you just have to get those out of the way before you can really help them?
Well, a lot of people are focused on the wrong things. a lot of people are focused on the wrong things. For example, I hear people ask me all the time, well, what do I do with my hands? What do I do with my hands? And I don't really care that much about what you do with your hands. Right. I don't really care. I care that you do two things. I care that you make good eye contact, and I care that you speak with some energy. If you do those two things, all the other stuff, weird hands, standing wrong, doing all sorts of things, it's not nearly as important as just making that good, strong eye contact and speaking with some energy.
Now, you mentioned that brevity is important. What's the time window that you think is good for presentations?
Well, you know, my newest book, which I brought with me, hold on.
It's a pocketbook?
Yeah, it is a pocketbook. I brought it out of my pocket. Yeah, it's called 15 Minutes Including Q&A, A Plan to Save the World from Lousy Presentations.
I love it.
And the idea is that I really do believe that most presentations, most business presentations can be done in 15 minutes, including Q&A. So that means that, and I'm also advocating that you save half your time Q&A. So that most business presentations, if you have a plan and if you do it right, you should be able to do it in about 7 or 8 minutes and leave plenty of time for Q&A.
What do you do when you go, anybody have any questions, and then no one says anything?
Well, that's a problem. Yeah, you don't want that to happen. Yeah, I think that one of the reasons you don't get questions is people don't know that they're supposed to ask questions. A lot of people get up there, and they have 30 slides, and they have a short period of time, and you know, they think that the people in the audience think that God, there's so many slides. This is such a long, dense presentation. I'm not going to ask any questions. But if you start from the beginning and you tell people, "Hey, I want some questions. I want you to ask questions. I've planned for you to ask questions," typically they'll do what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the slides. We pro slides, anti slides. Do just a few slides. What advice do you have around those support materials?
I think slides are fine. I do think people overuse them. I think people put way too many slides in their presentations, but we're not anti-slide. We do slides, we use slides, but I do think you should keep your slides to a minimum, and I do think you should minimize the amount of stuff that's on your slides.
Do you like when presentations have, like, instead of bullet points or a lot of words, they have, like, some imagery or they're trying to make some sort of an emotional connection rather than kind of a cerebral?
Yeah, in general, we say it's better to have pictures or graphs than just a bunch of bullet points or a lot of text on a slide. I mean, the fact of the matter is if all you're going to do is read a slide to your audience, why even bother bringing them? I mean, right. Why even bother having the presentation? Just send them the slides.
Yeah. Let them read everybody sometime.
Yeah, anybody can read. Everybody can read.
So you've been in business for a long time, well-respected, well-known. We, of course, had heard of you long before now. What compelled you to write the book?
What compelled you to write this book?
Yeah.
You know, I've written 4 books. This is my most recent book, and all my other books were sort of long books, and I had this sense that, you know what, we needed a simple, short book that sort of somebody could read in about 30 minutes and learn basically everything there is to know about how to create and connect, create great presentations and connect with audiences, and that was the goal of this book.
Right. Someone recently told me that brevity is really important.
It is. It is.
Certainly can
I mean,
be.
Think about it. Think about it. The most popular YouTube video in history is...
The Gangnam Style
video. How long was it?
About 2.5.
4 minutes.
4 minutes.
4 minutes long. The average video, the average Gangnam Style, excuse me, the average YouTube video is about 4 minutes and 10 seconds. We are not accustomed anymore to long presentations. You know, everybody thinks about the guy who went before Abraham Lincoln at the Gettysburg Address. Do you know who it was?
No.
Senator Edward Everett of Massachusetts spoke for 2.5 hours.
Oh, my.
And that was considered, but that was considered the norm in those days. People love that. People, you know, people didn't have YouTube. They didn't watch, you know, dog videos in the middle of the night like I do. So nowadays, people just aren't used to these long things, and you have to keep it short.
Now, when you're working with people in presentations, does it transfer to video? Because a lot of firms are moving towards more kind of a video getting their messages out through video.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the same principle, though. A video needs to be short. You need to keep your messages clean and simple, very clear, mm-hmm. things like that. Yeah, and also you have to make, to speak on video, you have to speak with some energy.
And what about introducing a speaker? There's probably some technique mechanic to that can really set the person up well and probably some things that can really make it stale, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing to do when you're introducing a speaker is not to read their resume. This is a classic thing that people do. They read their resume, and usually that's really boring. Instead, what we tell people to do is make it personal. If you're introducing somebody, make it personal. Tell a personal story about that person, about, and then give a sense to the audience of how that person is going to help the people in the audience.
Now, your core business is not necessarily aimed at the professional speaker, but you probably find yourself in the room with those guys from time to time, too, right?
We don't really work that much with professional speakers. It's usually CEOs, VPs of sales, CFOs, things like that.
And then, Lee, and you touched on it a little bit earlier, but walk us through that whole process that they often self-identify or they identify an employee.
Right.
And then what is it, kind of a consulting engagement, a nine-week thing, a six-week thing?
Well, no, we have one-day workshops. We have two-day workshops. We also do individualized coaching. We do seminars. I mean, we sort of, you know, these ideas, how to organize a message, how to deliver it well, and how to answer questions, we do that, but we slice and dice that, and we deliver that in a lot of different ways, from three-hour seminars to two-day workshops to engagements where we are hired to help people with very specific pursuits or specific speaking opportunities.
So like if somebody had a keynote somewhere, you can help them prepare to get ready for that?
Yeah, it's to help with a keynote, or if a sales team has a big sales presentation, we're often brought in to help presentations that are, you know, where a lot of money is at stake, will help them compete for that opportunity.
So what do you do if someone asks a question and you just flat out don't know the answer?
If you mean in a presentation?
In a presentation, yeah.
Yeah, I think you should say, I don't know. Uh-huh. This is not politics.
There's an idea.
This is not politics. In politics, it's fine to, you know, to make stuff up and to not tell the truth and evade. But in business, your credibility is at stake. And so you need to tell the truth. You need to say, I don't know the answer. And then you need to help them. You need to say, I'm going to help you. I'm going to get the answer for you. And you need to get back to them.
And humor, is this something that you ought to have in every talk? Or some people should do humor and some people ought to leave it alone?
Yeah, I think the thing is, my rule with humor is use humor if you're funny. Most people aren't funny, and so people want to be funny, and they try real hard to be funny, and there are things you can do to be funny. My good friend Jeff Justice, who has a program here in town called Jeff Justice's Comedy Workshop. It's a great thing. You guys should attend it. But, you know, he can help you be funny, but in general, in business, you're not an entertainer. You're there to help the people in your audience. You're there to help move your organization forward, and humor really isn't really what this is about.
Now, when you're structuring a presentation, are there kind of points that they all have to hit? Like every presentation hits certain things, like you got to get an intro and you got to close, and there's certain mechanics to it?
Yeah, I mean, we teach a methodology. We teach a formula based on what I'm sure many of you have heard before, the old idea that you should have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You tell them what you're going to tell them, then you...
Tell them.
Then you tell them, and then you?
Tell them what you told them.
Then you tell them what you told them. I mean, that's exactly what we teach. I mean, we teach you to keep it to 3 points. We teach you to tell stories. We teach you to always start by focusing on what your listeners' key issues are. So, we teach a methodology.
So this doesn't have to be confined to executives in large organizations. I mean, it seems to me like virtually anyone in an organization of any size and complexity could really profit from this experience.
Yeah, we don't only work with CEOs and executives. We work with people in all levels. I mean, our clients are companies like Home Depot, Bank of America, SunTrust, and they don't only send their highest level people. We work with people at all levels.
Well, and I'm thinking, even if my sales force weren't necessarily in a position of making formal presentations, I don't see any downside to them being exposed to these techniques and these mechanics and this mindset.
I see no downside at all. Why don't we set up a meeting?
Way, right?
Yeah, why don't we set up a meeting? We can talk about how we can help you guys.
I'd like to see your presentation on that.
So what are they scared of when you first start talking to them? Because I got to believe fear is going to be a big part of what you run into.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are nervous. That's one of the real reasons that people come to us. They're worried. They're standing in front of people, and it's nerve-wracking, no doubt about it.
So what's next for you? What are you going to be focusing your energy on in the coming months? You're going to be marketing this book and really helping people with these rifle shot presentations.
Yeah, we're marketing this book. This has been my most popular book. It's the shortest book, and it's also the most popular book. So
there's a lesson in that.
So there's a lesson in that, right? There's a lesson in that. But we're translating this book to Spanish, and we're just moving forward. We're moving forward with that. We had our best year ever last year, and we're hoping to have another good one this year.
That's it. Next interview, we're going to have you back, but we want to do it in Spanish.
Absolutely. No problemo.
What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you, get their hands on this book, and maybe have a conversation with you about making better presentations?
Yeah, well, our phone number is 404-266-0888. The name of our company is Speechworks. You can go to our website at speechworks.net, and we hope you'll think about using us.
Man, that's great stuff. Thanks for coming in today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, did you learn anything, Lee? I'm going to sign you up.
I'm going to read that book. Or even better, I'll have you read the book.
I'll read the book to you in 15 minutes or less. What do you think about that? And I will be prepared for questions. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have from Do Good, Get Rewards, Miss Tammy Allen. Welcome to the show, Tammy.
Good morning. You guys are so fun.
So
now I need energy, right? I need to speak with energy. Okay.
Don't feel like you're being judged, though.
I don't mind being judged.
A presentation expert is watching you now.
You're doing great so far. Everything's great.
Okay, good. I'll keep it short.
So tell us about all this good you're doing.
Well, we are a volunteer rewards program, and so it's a free resource for nonprofits to show appreciation, to retain and increase their volunteers. But mostly, you know, when people do something for you, you want to give them something back. You have this impulse that says, oh, you're so good, what can I do for you? And, of course, nonprofits, they can't pay them. So we provide that service, and they love us.
So the rewards are for the volunteers? It's not for the donors?
No, it's for the people that actually...
Who are working for the nonprofit.
Right, and the volunteers are the free workforce of, you know, so, I mean... What you can see how you would be indebted.
Yeah, that's an interesting niche.
Well, it is a niche, and you're always saying niches. Bring riches.
Bring you
riches. Apparently, you're not always saying it. You said it once. I remembered
it. You remembered it.
So what's your favorite part about this work?
I don't know.
Probably the opportunity to appear on the radio. That's what you enjoy the most, right?
You know, I got into this because I actually wrote a song, Everyday People Do Good Every Day. I'm a singer-songwriter by... lifelong trade. And I just wanted to acknowledge people for everyday acts of kindness. And I had just started doing PR and marketing. And one of the hard things about doing, you know, marketing is getting people in the door. And so when I had the idea, it was like, how do I reward people? And then I discovered that 64 million people volunteer every year. I mean, and what I've found since then, that number is not even accurate. It's got to be 2 to 3 times more than that. And then I was really excited, and I found out that there was nothing like this. And of course, how do I get rewards was my next problem.
Right.
And so I remembered, of course, how hard it is to get people in the door, put two and two together, convince my best friend to invest money, convince my husband to invest money he didn't know he invested. And we were off and running. And it's been an adventure.
Can you share a little bit about how you convinced that first nonprofit to try this? Because this seems...
Do you know that was easy?
That was easy.
Oh, that's the easy part. We have, like, I don't know, it's about 230 nonprofits using the program now, and we have distributed over $88,000 in rewards incentives to volunteers.
So what's the hard part?
Well, initially the focus was on local businesses.
Right.
I wanted to do...
So you wanted the rewards to be locally... Around.
Yeah, I wanted to make it win-win. I mean, from the get-go, you know, there has to be great value in it for everybody.
Right.
For the nonprofits, of course, it's a way that they can, you know, feel that need to reward their volunteers. And for the volunteers, they're getting free stuff.
Right.
Volunteers love that. Everybody loves free stuff. And then for the businesses, it's driving traffic. And I wanted it to still, you know, I wanted to increase volunteering locally, wanted to drive traffic locally. But Groupon came along about the same time, and all of the daily deals, and we really got lumped into the same ballpark. And so, you know, I quickly knew that I had to go for national brands. Well, we know that national brands are, you know, a little bit tougher to get to than just local businesses. To this point, local businesses have been provided most of the rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the one that had to go and secure those local businesses. So you can imagine that's been quite an adventure for me. But the nonprofit part has been easy. That's kind of taken care of itself. So not too much to do there. If you've got the free stuff, they're going to come. I mean, that's just kind of the way it works. So anyway, I started focusing on national brands, and I'm proud to say we have our first national partner as Panera Bread.
Congratulations.
Yay!
We love Panera, right?
That's right.
Like, what is that, Wednesdays Panera?
That's right, Wednesdays are Panera.
Right.
They really are a great company, and I met them at a conscious capitalism conference. You guys heard of conscious capitalism?
Yeah, I was just listening to the Whole Foods guy.
Yeah, I was too on the drive in. Right.
I actually met him and got to speak with him. I commandeered him for about 10 minutes. It was pretty cool at the conference. But I did connect with the marketing director of Panera Bread, and you know, it was it took me about a year. You know, I won't say it's a long sales cycle, but you know, once you have that relationship and you connect and they see your heart and you know what it is you're trying to do, I think that people naturally want to help. And you know, when you focus on good, then you get good.
Now, we do a lot of work with nonprofits here on this station, and can you walk us through, like, from if you were talking to a nonprofit about how this program would work for them?
Sure. They sign up as a member. It's free. They create their own little member page, just like a Facebook page, and then after they've signed up, we send them text and materials to let their volunteers know about the program, that they're participating, and they roll it out to their volunteers. The volunteers sign up as members, same process, and they submit their hours that they have volunteered to their nonprofit organization for validation. So there is a validation process, and then once that happens, they get a little email, they log in and reward them all, like accepting friends on Facebook. And then a little email goes out to the volunteers saying, your points have been awarded and an invitation to go shopping. So they go shopping. I have people that wait. Have they got new stuff yet? We want more stuff.
So the more they volunteer, the more they earn?
Yes. The points are the commerce on the site. So they spend them in whatever way for whatever offers that we have on the website.
I love it. Now, does it have to be confined to volunteer organizations, or that's just the niche that you've decided to focus? But I mean, you could do this with Weight Watchers or anything where you want compliance.
Well, I want to keep it to do good, get rewards. I want to keep it to some sort of, now, if you've participated in a cause-related event, a walk for, you know, a cure for a cause, you know, so we will be expanding beyond that and are in the process of doing that now. We're talking to some brands. I don't want to give away my whole.
But that's where your effort is right now, and in the near future, right? You need more Paneras. You want Panera, right. Home Depot, all the big players, right?
Right.
Whole Foods, Business Radio X. These really big players, right?
Well, you know, this is the real value proposition for, you know, what I say to brands is, I say, what we do is distribute small brand incentives to show appreciation, their appreciation for those volunteers for their service. Now, the benefit for the brands is it's going to drive traffic. The small incentive generates a co-spend, which generates revenue. And, of course, when you actually go to redeem that, you're going to associate that, you know, with that volunteer experience with that brand. So that lifts brand equity. And I got a great story to tell. Can you talk about stories?
Let's hear it.
Okay. So let's say you have volunteered at a Habitat for Humanity build, and you had a great experience and camaraderie, and at the end of the day, I show up, and this has actually happened. I show up, and I say, I've got $5 Panera Bread cards if they want to show their appreciation, and would you like a $5 Panera Bread card? They sign up. They give me their emails. They wait. I probably get 80% of the people that do that, okay? So now, does that have the same value to you as if you had got a $5 Panera Bread card in the mail?
No.
No. Very different value. So now you go to Panera Bread. Are you going to remember how you got that gift card when you go to spend it?
You're going to connect the two.
You're going to connect the two. And how much are you going to spend?
A lot more than $5.
Bingo. There's my value proposition.
Did you have to kind of pilot that for Panera so they can see that?
Yes. They are actually tracking the co-spend.
Uh-huh.
And there's more. Now there's technology that we can take and track. We can actually put the incentive on a debit or credit card, and they can track the point of sale. So they can actually, we can show everything.
Wow, that's great. So analytics and those kind of things, that's an important component of your business, isn't it?
It is. Now, when I started all this, and I just wanted
was,
to do
huh?
good, I had no idea.
All of a sudden, you're like an IT firm now,
oh,
right?
Oh, my goodness.
Because you got to track a lot of stuff.
Well, where you guys know me is from the startup community.
That's where it is. I knew you looked so familiar.
Because I had to learn all of this stuff. It's been three years, and, you know, I just jumped in. I didn't know what I was doing.
we're going to be at the start. We're doing a remote broadcast at the Startup Riot.
Riot.
Yep. On February the 20th. That's where I knew it. I knew I'd seen you somewhere.
Yeah. But it has been very valuable. There's a lot of great mentors in the startup community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, they really did help me fine-tune my message, which I tend to, I can't help but get excited. That's, for me, I have to more slow down.
So now that it seems like you got this thing going now it's just a matter of rolling it out, right, and getting more brands involved.
Yes.
Where do you see this thing going?
National. quickly as possible.
As quickly as possible.
Yes.
Well, I want to talk about, because so many of our listeners are small business people, and some of those who are small business people are only small business people because they haven't figured out how to be big business people yet.
This is true.
So I want to talk about that process of just getting this your organization off the ground, some of the milestones that you hit. Maybe you could save a few headaches that they don't have to experience. Walk us through that launch, if you will.
Well, you know, initially I just thought it was a great idea and that everybody would absolutely love it and I would be off and running. And, of course, the nonprofits have loved it.
Right. You know, that was from day one, right? I'm sure.
Yeah, it really was. And actually, even with not having that many great rewards, we have a 27% redemption rate and 57% return for multiple redemptions once we have them. You know, we have them. And so I know that as getting national brands that number will increase a lot. But so, you know, I just got out there and got busy, and I don't know how else you can do it, you know, but to go out and try your idea, jump in. I did learn very fast what wasn't working. When you see something's not working, the beautiful thing about being a small business person is that you can change.
Right, you're nimble.
Yeah, I changed fast. As soon as something is not working.
What was something that wasn't working that you thought for sure in your head was going to work?
Well, local businesses.
Local businesses.
Yeah.
So you thought, like, oh, they're going to be lining up for this?
Well, I thought at least they'd understand it. But, you know, there's so much, and it's not that they don't. It's just that they're so much in survival mode and in the grind, and there's so many things coming at them that they, you know, and I don't like, I want to provide a service. I want to know that I'm providing value.
Right, you're trying to help.
I'm trying to help. I'm not trying to hurt. So when you go out and you feel like, you know, they feel like you're trying to just take from them. That's not my personality.
Exactly.
And that's not, so that didn't feel good.
So when you had to pivot and you had to move to these larger brands that have much, much longer sales cycles, that had to be a dramatic shift, right?
Yeah, it was. And I had to figure out how in the heck am I going to do that?
Survive, you know, until you start closing some of these, right?
Right. Well, you know, so that's when I came up with start going to the conferences and that's when I got in the entrepreneur community.
Right.
And,
so you had to fish where the fish were.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to go there where they were. And I just did some powerful fishing yesterday. It was Tuesday. But, you know, when people come to town, these networking events and stuff, and you know that there's somebody there that you're targeting, you better have a strategic plan, a two-sentence statement. You have to, like, okay, there's my person. You know everybody's targeting them, too. You have to wait for the right opportunity. You have to understand the protocol. It's like the hunt and the hunted. And they know that they're being hunted, okay?
That sounds like a good book opportunity here for you.
It sure does.
I'll let him write it.
Well, I'll tell you, she is singing Joey's song. Joey, his mic's still open, right? Joe, I got to believe this startup community, that's got to be a fertile market for you if it's something you decide to tap, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've done a fair amount of work with startups and helping them learn how to tell their story quickly, because what you're talking about is how do you tell that story quickly and simply so that somebody gets it?
Right off the bat.
And I think you do a great job of it, by the way.
Well, thank you.
There you go. Now, I know now that we've had this conversation, once you're in the boardroom, once you get these five minutes with the decision maker, you got to be knocking them over. You ought to be doing a great job. How do you even get in front of them? How do you?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Tough.
That's the challenging part.
It's this networking relationship.
When I get my toe or just a baby toe in the door, then I look for the next. You know, you move laterally. You know, you move any. You know, and I've got to tell you, it's not easy. I've had to learn. But
that's the hard part, right?
You know, I've had to learn. But it's like you have to look at a hill. I just got my little toe in the door. Okay, over here. And so you just, any opportunities that you get, you just work them. And you're always looking for next opportunities.
But you've identified, like you identified Panera. So you, I'm sure, have a list of these kind of dream partners for you. No,
it's going to be who I have access to. Yeah, it's like, okay, who can I access from where I am with the resources that I have, which are none. You know what I mean? I mean, that's, you know, when you are starting anything, I mean, you have no resources but your mind,
your brain,
intellect,
right.
you know, your inspiration. And so I'm always asking myself questions, you know, and how do I get to, you know, what do I have to say? Because how inspiration comes is you have to ask the question and then shut up. In your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask the question, understand your goal, and then wait for an idea to come. And you may need to go do your laundry, and the idea will come. You know what I mean? So you just have to trust whatever process that you have to get those ideas that are going to make you to that next strategic place.
And when you first talk to a Panera or Home Depot or whoever you're wanting to do work with, do they typically ask some of the same questions of you? They have some of the same or is it just
all
over the map?
You never know. And the Panera Bread guy was definitely not an easy man. He had lots of comebacks, and you know, I went away and I came back and I had a response and an answer. I thought I can think on my feet, and he said, "You're a little percolator, aren't you?" So you don't know, you know. You
so
just got to be creative.
Down, right?
I did wear him down. Exactly. That's exactly it. You just keep on coming with always kindness and respect and honoring, you know, their space. I mean, we all know if you come at them and you're just
right,
you know,
they want to work with people they like too.
Sure, I think that the relationship is still about connecting. Once you have connected with somebody, and I say try to get them on the phone or in front of them, because just an email, or even when you're sending an email, you put yourself in it. You've done your homework on that person. You know what they're doing. For me, it's what their corporate social responsibility is. What are their needs? How can my platform fill those needs? And so I very carefully even craft an email to put my feel into it. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you, you certainly cracked the code on being engaging and energizing in a conversation. You're welcome back here anytime.
Well, thank you. And, of course, if you are a nonprofit, you can go to dogoodgetrewards.com.
And, well, if you're a national brand, you can go there, too, I'm sure.
That's right.
Or contact me at 678-344-6032. And this is fun. You guys are just fun.
I haven't looked at the books yet, but we may very well be a nonprofit for 2012 anyway. I'll find out.
And do you guys volunteer? We do have like trips and cruises. I forgot to tell about. We have massages and yoga.
Oh, so you have a whole arm of your businesses just in general for volunteers, like helping volunteers connect with nonprofits?
We do have look for volunteer opportunities on our website as well.
That's great.
It's just that the way that, you know, people have used it has been pretty much, I want to get my points and I want to spend them.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it's gone. So that's okay. I'm good with that.
Kevin and I are volunteering right now.
I was going to ask
you. There's no
you.
Check in our future.
You know, I can hook you up with a Bahamas cruise.
We'll put that out there instead of paying them. We'll just have a chance to win.
So one more time, let's make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you. Let's get your coordinates, website, phone number, email, all that stuff.
Okay. DoGoodGetRewards.com. The phone number is 678-344-6032. If you're a nonprofit, a brand, a volunteer, we're your one-stop shop.
What a delight having you.
Or even
you
a local business. We're not local against business? Local businesses. Right. Of course, we love local businesses.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio this morning, and we will have you back and maybe get caught up on some new stories and some new partnerships that you create. Listen, how about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our last guest?
I'll do it. Thank you.
All right. Lee, the undercard we're done with. Yes. We're ready for the headliner. Bringing it all home for us with the American Jewish Committee Atlanta, Mr. Dov Wilker. Welcome to the show, man.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This is going to be a very tough act to follow. These are very impressive guests, and I have no idea what I can say to even compare to that.
Well, I see. I saw you smile. I saw you nod. You were probably taking notes. It seems like you got some value out of the last couple of conversations.
Tremendous. I've got a presentation later today. I'm going to got to find a way to make it.
You want to borrow that book?
That's right.
I'll lease it to you for 15 minutes. So tell us about this outfit, American Jewish Committee Atlanta.
So American Jewish Committee is a global Jewish advocacy organization. We were founded in 1906 in Chicago, and we were founded in Atlanta in the 1940s. We've got 25 offices in the United States and 10 offices overseas. And the goal of the organization is to meet with and engage with leaders from the non-Jewish community. So to bring the work and to create understanding and build bridges and relationships between the Jewish community and the various religious, ethnic, and national communities in Atlanta and around the world.
And what are some of the challenges that you face, like here in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, there's tons. It's a wonderful organization, and it's wonderful work that we do, but part of the challenges is, I mean, we're based off of we have to do fundraisers. We have to, you know, we rely on donors. We rely on advocates. You know, we rely on organizations to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of it is searching out and finding those leaders within the community that are interested in dialogue, that are interested in developing relationships. So as, you know, and as the world has changed, as the world has become flatter, our work has become much more on a global scale. So global relates not just to the geographic location of the world, but also to the various diverse communities in Atlanta. So Atlanta is a city of 5 million people in the metro Atlanta area. And there's lots of different minority communities. There's lots of different religions, cultures, ethnicities, nationalities. and everybody is trying to understand how to work with each other. And so our place in the community is to really help these community leaders work with each other and mm-hmm. develop an understanding so that they're able, so that we all live in a better world.
Now, you got your MBA from Tel Aviv University in Israel?
That's correct.
And you worked in the startup community there?
I did work in the startup community. I worked for a software startup.
So I've heard that Israel is the kind of Silicon Valley too.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, can you share a little bit about what that environment's like there in the startup community?
It's intense. It's intense. You know, every day, all you're doing is talking with your colleagues and your friends. Everybody works in a different type of startup, whether it be I work for a software as a service. Right. My friends worked in payment software. You know, all you're doing is talking about new ideas, idea generation, how to, you know, reach into new markets. The company that I worked for, I worked specifically with 400 clients around the world. So based in Tel Aviv, you're working with clients from Australia to California, and you're working 24/7 because, you know, you start a day at 7 a.m., it's 5 p.m. in Australia, and you finish the day at 7 p.m. and it's 9 a.m. in California. So you're literally working all the time, nonstop. And it's a great environment, too, because everybody recognizes the benefit that Israel has, which is their startup culture, in the innovation factor. And so it provides a lot of opportunity for people to do whatever it is to create opportunities and ideas, and people are willing to take those risks that in a lot of different cultures they're not used to.
Right. Now, Atlanta is trying to build a thriving startup community here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know this, but Cox Communications just, I guess, wants to put $250 million towards a startup community. The guy who was the founder of Pardot is starting what's it called, the
Tech Village.
Tech Village in Buckhead, and there's Tag, and there's the
Hippopotamus,
right? There's
ATDC.
There's a lot of startup stuff happening here, but it isn't. Atlanta isn't seen as kind of a startup scene like the Boston's, New York's, and Silicon Valley's, and Israel is. What do you think that we can be doing to kind of create that kind of atmosphere in here?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to take time, but I also think that we have a huge benefit, which is Georgia Tech. And, you know, people, I mean, Georgia Tech is a world-renowned institution.
Right.
And I think the association with Georgia Tech for the city, I think, does allow it and enables it to grow as a startup community. It's also the growing number of businesses that are located here. You've got the Googles. I think Facebook might be opening.
I know they all have offices here,
right.
But is it something that is the work that you're doing right now? Is that a way to create a bridge to maybe Israel to get some of that startup stuff that's happening there kind of connected here to Atlanta?
Absolutely. I mean, we work with lots of different types of organizations, and we try to focus on those entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs are generally open-minded people that are willing to take risks, and the work that we do with American Jewish Committee is a risk-taking venture because you're engaging in conversations and dialogues with people that don't necessarily agree with you. And startup and creating a startup is all about taking risks and challenging yourself to create new opportunities and new ideas and willing to, I don't want to say fail, but willing to see when something that might not be going right. As Tammy said, you know, she's able to pivot very quickly,
right,
very easily. And the work that we bring in Israelis all the time, there are other business organizations that bring in Israeli entrepreneurs and that do work with the business community that focus specifically on bringing in Israeli businesses to Atlanta. So it's definitely something that we are a part of.
So facilitating this cross-cultural trade, this mm-hmm. multinational trade, that's part of what you're out there doing for folks.
Yeah, it's something that we help with. It's not the core of our mission, but it's something that, you know, we recognize that relationships is how the world is evolving and creating opportunities for people and connections for people. So if I'm not the best person, I you know, hope that I know somebody that is better that I'm able to connect people with. And our relationships that we have does enable people to bridge those gaps.
Now, what's a day look like for you? What's your typical day?
Generally, it starts off looking at our donor list and seeing how we can grow and expand our reach. Usually entails a conversation with one or two diplomats, consuls general or ambassadors, move on to meeting with the head of a religious organization. Usually spend time working with our volunteers, our executive committee, to make sure that our strategy for the next few months, the next quarter, the next year is succinct and sustainable. And then we have a young professionals division. So usually entails something dealing with young professionals and helping young professionals learn more about the community, engage in these conversations with other young professionals. Because what we find is oftentimes the people who have the most time are the people that are experienced. But it's the young professionals that really want to engage in these conversations. So we provide opportunities for young professionals from different communities to come together to have these similar conversations. And that creates a networking opportunity as well. We have a lot of our young professionals are either own their own businesses or are starting their own ventures. And we find opportunities for them to connect with other young professionals of similar ilk.
Now, what's an event like that look like?
Usually has some sort of content associated with it, whether we have a panel of speakers that are talking about a critical issue of today, be it immigration reform, energy security, the Iranian nuclear threat, peace and security for Israel. But there's a networking component that starts at the beginning of it that allows people to have their personal conversation. And then once the program itself is kind of concluded, it's that 15 minutes in the Q&A. So it's the Q&A part which allows them to interact with each other along with the speakers.
This interview brought to you by SpeechWorks. as apparently much of the last interview it was. Well, I wonder if you'd be willing to share a recent success story or maybe a success story in progress that kind of really outlines for us exactly what's going on.
I guess a tremendous success story that we have is the work that we do takes years to see the results.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is something that when we look at it, you can start at year one, and only 20 years later might you actually see the direct success. But one story that I can definitely share is the Atlanta mayor, Kasim Reed. Kasim has been a very good friend of the Jewish community for a long time. One of our programs is the Black Jewish Coalition. And the Black Jewish Coalition was founded in 1982 by Congressman John Lewis and Cecil Alexander. And part of the coalition, we have a program called the Young Leadership Retreat. And Kasim participated in this retreat a number of years ago. And through that experience, he became more involved in the organization. He traveled with American Jewish Committee to Israel, along with a group of legislators, both Republicans and Democrats. And then his relationship within the Jewish community has evolved since then. And recently, as Israel was at war with Hamas, the Mayor Reed came to the Jewish community rally and spoke about his support for Israel and his support for the Jewish community based off of his experiences. So that's something, that's a relationship that we've developed over 10, 15 years that we were able to see the direct results of. And it's not, it's here in Atlanta, it's my colleagues around the country have very similar stories. So it's something that we're able to show and say it's not something you're going to see the result, you know, tomorrow. But if you, by sticking with us, by working with us over, you know, years, you will see the result.
But then what is actually the result of that? Like him going there and him speaking about that, what is the result?
The result is a new understanding of a complex situation. And so somebody who is able to not just pay attention to what the news says, but have a better understanding from their experience on the ground. When we send people to Israel, our goal is that they have a better understanding of a very complex situation, which is not easily defined and which people try to make too simple too often.
Right.
And so the success is that we've somebody who is not in the Jewish community has a better understanding of this important important U.S.-Israel relationship. And that's, while there's no dollar figures behind it, there is a success and understanding in that we have achieved a relationship that is longstanding.
What incredibly rewarding work this must be.
No,
I mean,
it's
you
fun.
Must
it
really
is.
Enjoy your work.
I love what I do. I really do. I was very fortunate. When I was living in Israel and this position opened up, I never intended on leaving. I love working in the soft. I love working for my startup.
Right.
I love living in Israel. I live, you know, 2 minutes from the beach. I mean, it's much better than the rainy weather that we have today.
That's right.
I don't think about beach when you say Israel, because the pictures you get on the news don't look like Miami Beach or anything like that. But yeah, if you do good, you get rewards,
right?
Right, Tammy?
There's lots of ways to get rewards.
That's right. Yeah. You got on our radar because you made the 40 under 40. What was that like? Tell us a little bit about that.
That was fantastic. I was actually, I was in the Atlanta Business Chronicles 40 under 40 this past year. I was selected to be one. I'm actually 30, so I was the second youngest person on the list, which was, you know,
sweet.
Made my mom very happy. It was an incredible opportunity. We, as an organization, I've been involved with hosting prime ministers and foreign ministers and ambassadors. And we also, one of our other programs is the Atlanta Jewish Film Festival, which kicks off January 30th. Until February 20th.
It's coming up.
It's coming up soon. So get your tickets because we've sold out over 60 screenings. But the Business Chronicle is an incredible group of professionals from throughout the community. And it was a wonderful opportunity to meet with people who are involved in different work, be them professional and they're very involved as a volunteer, or other volunteers, directors of different nonprofit organizations. And being associated with this network of people is really wonderful. It was fantastic. I was truly honored to be selected this year.
Now, talk a little bit about the film festival, because doesn't Sue Ann, you work with?
Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, Sue Ann, that's right. Sue Ann's managing opening night this year for us.
Yeah, I know. That was one of her
We're projects. A big Sue Ann fan, aren't we?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, she's doing a fantastic job.
So every year, it seems like that thing's just getting bigger and bigger.
Every year, that's right. This is its 13th year. We were actually talking with Joey that he had been a volunteer with us our first year of the festival.
Wow.
So he's truly seen the growth. Last year, we issued over 30,000 tickets to the festival. It's the largest film festival in the city and the second largest Jewish film festival in the United States.
How did that whole thing bubble up, like in Atlanta, where it can grow a film festival like this?
It's a great question. I would say, I think three things. We American Jewish Committee created the film festival to further our goal of building bridges.
So you do that all over in all of the places you're at?
No, it's actually unique to Atlanta.
Oh, so it's unique to Atlanta.
Wow. Atlanta, 15 years ago, Atlanta did not have a Jewish film festival. And so there was a market opportunity for us. There was an opening.
Right.
And so the organization decided one of the ways to promote dialogue is through film. Film is an easy medium that brings together people of different cultures to discuss difficult issues because you're engaging in a common theme, whereas speakers can be polarizing, movies can be polarizing, but there's a general level of understanding mm-hmm. about film. And so we created the festival to further that goal. And, over time, we've got more people involved. The films got better. The venues got better. We were able to we have incredible leadership both on the professional side and the lay side. Our festival director, Kenny Blank, who's been in charge now for 8 years, just does a wonderful job curating the films and selecting the appropriate films. But we also have a group of 150 people that watch at least a minimum of 50 movies.
Where do you sign up for that job?
You send me an email. And they select and they filter through and they engage in conversation about whether a film is a good film, whether it's the quality, the value, the mission, if it's relevant. So not just any film gets in the festival. It has to be a good quality film that's mission related and has a Jewish theme to it. And what makes a film Jewish is anybody's guess. So if you have an idea, please let me know. I'm still trying to figure it out.
So now, when a person engages and goes to one of these films, how do you connect that to your overall mission? Is there like talks afterwards? Is there interaction before and after?
No, it's a great question. For a lot of the all films have an introductory speaker, and then many of the film screenings have Q&As afterwards.
Uh-huh.
And then what we try to do is we look at the films, we look at where people have, what types of film people have seen, and then we try to bring that back and segment the list into the different areas of the work that we do with the American Jewish Committee so that we're able to follow up with people appropriately based off of their interests. So it's a wonderful way for us to identify people's interests and how they can further be involved. Because the work that we do is, we do programs that, bring 100, 150, 50, 20 people. So it's not like they get to go and volunteer at the food bank, but it's creating additional educational opportunities for them to engage in intellectual and very interesting conversations.
Right. This seems like an easy way to engage with people that's, you can get them involved in a way that doesn't seem too, overwhelming.
That's right. And one of the key things to the festival is that it engages, it's not just for the Jewish community. The festival really does a great job. I think over 20% of our audience is not Jewish,
mm-hmm.
Which is really the purpose. It makes it
it's
what differentiates the Jewish Film Festival from all of the other film festivals in the city is our mission to engage beyond the Jewish community. And because there are so many different types of film, it's not when most people think of a Jewish film festival, they think probably of a, it's a Holocaust film festival or it's related to Israel.
Another Fiddler on the Roof.
Exactly. Right. But our film, one of the films that we're screening this year is called When Pigs Have Wings, and it's an Israeli film about a Palestinian fisherman who catches a pig and tries to figure out how to return the pig. Or, you know, there's lots of other films. There's an Israeli comedy. There's a film about an Australian cartoonist. There's we're actually screening a film this year called The Rabbi's Cat, which will be screened in 3D. It'll be our first time
first
that we're
3D?
First
wow.
3D film. Our opening night film is Hava Nagila, and it's screening at the Cobb Energy Center, which is
wow.
the program that Sue Ann is working on. So right. it's going to be it's a tremendous festival. We have over, I think, 60 films, 70 films, and tickets are, you know, they sell out. The key thing is actually is that if you want to get a seat, you have to be there like an hour and a half before the film because the people line up to enter the theaters.
And then, but this film festivals haven't rolled out to the other AJC regions?
It's
Because I would think with the success of this, you would think that somebody else would do it in another market.
It's true. Some of our other offices are associated with film festivals, but the film festivals were already created by other institutions. So mm-hmm. the American Jewish Committee isn't going to go ahead and create a new film festival in a city, but our office in Seattle has a film festival. Our Westchester office right. has a film festival. Or in Chicago, San Francisco, they're involved with the film festivals because the programming around the films is really a key aspect to the work that we do.
Right. So Cobb Energy Center, you said?
Cobb Energy Center, January 30th, is our opening night film, Hava Nagila, the movie.
It's a beautiful facility. An Oscars thing there one year. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's perfect for that.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful. It's a great venue. Every seat is great. There's about 2,700 seats in the theater, so we do hope to be able to sell out that theater.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And we're screening at theaters all around the city, so we're at the Terra... Terra Theaters, Atlantic Station, the LaFont Sandy Springs, Georgia Merchants Walk, and Regal North Point up off 400.
All right. Let's get your coordinates for website, phone Great. Number, all that stuff.
Wonderful. So our website is ajcatlanta.org, or you can go to ajc.org for our national, not ajc.com, ajc.org. The best way is my email is atlanta@ajc.org. And for the film festival, it's ajff.org. So ajfffilmfestival.org.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of this. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.